Everything gonna be all right this morning.
And 3, 2, 1.
Exactly. Here we go, off to the races yet again, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode for the Archives of It's Me, speaking to you with Jeffrey Wilson on this lovely year of our Lord 2024, April 26th, looking out the window here in this kind of cloudy, gloomy St. Louis day, but summer is approaching. Looking forward to it. Even more looking forward to this conversation here. Last time she was on, last time we had a chance to chat, it was, I think, December of 2019. It was during COVID, when COVID was kind of winding down. Want to chop it up with her, see what she's been up to. She's been into a lot, some international travel, just a little bit of everything. And I'm so very thankful for her taking the time to come back and bless us once again with her presence. The most lovely. Welcome to Tara Dice, everyone. It is Tara Patrick. How are we doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. And we are recording this time. I'm such a bonehead. We were talking for a couple of minutes here and I hadn't even hit record. Been doing this too long to be making those kind of rookie mistakes. But as we were talking there before, you guys got hit really hard over there in Italy with COVID. How did everything wind down? I mean, you got the family over there, and I mean, it was just kind of a very crazy, tumultuous time. Let's kind of pick up where we left off, man, towards the end of COVID. How did everything wind down over there?
Yes. So I moved to Italy in 2015. I've been here for a few years now, and we did. We got hit really hard. I'm in the northern region of Italy, so it was just completely shut down. I could not travel back to the U.S. to see my family, and nobody was working. And it was just a difficult time. It was a gloomy time, I think, mentally for everyone.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Doing your podcast was helpful for me because it sort of still kept me connected to the outside world. I know that sounds dramatic.
No, right? It's absolutely true.
I mean, we weren't allowed to socialize. We were not allowed to go out here. I'm in Veneto. I'm about 20 in the region of Veneto. I'm like, my city's about 30 minutes from Venice. And so we were not allowed to leave our homes. We weren't allowed to go out and do anything. And I wasn't working. I was working solely online. And it was really different to adjust to that, being online, right?
Yeah. I mean, we did kind of our best numbers. I mean, it was because like we had nowhere else to go. So it was just about pushing out content and mostly at least, it was a very, very interesting time. And not to get too deep into kind of the politics of it or like the hindsight's 2020, was it, looking back on it, you know, through kind of historical perspective, I mean, obviously it was a crazy time, but this was a global pandemic. Do you think maybe it was a little, what's the word? They overdid it? Were they spot on? Like, what are your thoughts on kind of the measures they took to combat this, looking back on it, on how some of it might have been an overreach, in my opinion?
Well, I think dividing it up into two parts, so the personal and then the professional, I will agree with you on the professional front that I did astronomical numbers. I'm talking about memberships on my website, memberships on my OnlyFans, the amount of views that came to my blog, probably for you with your, you know, podcast, YouTube channel. Yes, people were home. And so what did we do? We went online and we, you know, took in all of this entertainment. And for me, it was really incredible, the numbers. I mean, my memberships quadrupled, you know, like tenfold. But the interesting twist to that, in my opinion, was we formed a lot of parasocial relationships. And I didn't find that to be healthy because, you know, a lot of, you know, like I said, I've had some of my members for so many years where my fans are, you know, a little bit older. They've followed me throughout my 20 plus years in the industry. And then I had a lot of guys that were coming on and they were like thinking that they were in this deep, intense relationship for me. And that burned me out really fast. I was not used to that. You know what I mean? OnlyFans phenomenon, we call it, where guys are just spending astronomical amounts of money, which for a lot of girls, it's like, hey, you're lining our pockets. But at the same time, it was like insane. I think the mental toll that it takes on you as a model, as a creator, influencer, whatever you want to call it.
No, absolutely.
But from the political perspective, I felt like it also caused so much havoc from it really, people became polarized. I had friends who were like, well, you're not vaccinated, Tara, so you shouldn't be allowed to come back here and infect all of us. I'm like, I'm not sick. Like, it was so crazy how it just caused so much fear mongering, no?
Well, and that's a part of the 2020 part of it. It's like, was the vaccine as incredible as they said it was going to be? Because they rolled it out as you won't get it. You won't shed. Right. You won't spread it. You won't get sick. But we found out that just wasn't the case. And then, you know, so much of the side effects, whether, you know, I don't mean to make light of it, but, you know, the myocarditis, the clot shot, they start calling it because of the heart issues, the strokes. And I mean, so anyway, like looking back on it, I just, excuse me, I just kind of want to get your perspective because it was so, I mean, it just shook up the whole world and just like looking back on it.
No, it really did. And I will say the interesting thing is, you know, being American and living overseas is such a funny thing because especially like people think they all think Americans are crazy. And I'm not going to generalize and say like they all, because, you know, I mean, so, you know, depending on, you know, we, so much of American culture, I'm using air quotes here, from movies, music, cinema, all of it, it's emulated. But I remember because on the news, you know, when they would show California or Florida or more liberal states of people just going out during COVID, I would hear here, oh my gosh, you Americans are so crazy. No wonder you're dying at alarming rates because you don't care and you're just spreading the disease. And so because I wasn't vaxxed and my family, we chose not to get vaxxed. People just were like, oh, of course you're not vaxxed. You're American. That was kind of like the answer.
Oh my gosh.
There was no scientific logic to anything. It was just like, well, you're American. You're just crazy. And that's why you didn't get vaccinated. And I'm like, now hold on here. Personally, you know, like I said, my daughter wasn't in school. I was working and studying from home. I actually went back to school during that time period. I wasn't in contact with anybody. I didn't see any benefit, and I had done my research to getting the vaccine.
Yes.
Also, I wasn't in contact with anybody. There I go, talking about America.
Yeah. Apparently, Skype doesn't like us talking about COVID, the vaccine. Sorry, we lost Tara there for a hot second. I'm not sure exactly where you were if you want to pick up, but I mean, just you were just basically saying how, you know, you were kind of getting that kind of stink eye from people around you, didn't get the vaccine, not jumping through the hoops as, you know, our masters have told us to jump through. And that was another part of it too, kind of the social engineering of it. I don't know if you remember the book, The Sneetches, the Dr. Seuss book, and there was like, there were all these like little yellow globs of kind of just, I don't know, looked like little yellow, like a Muppet or whatever. But one group had stars on their belly and the other one didn't. They all looked the same except for green stars on their belly. So the people with the green stars got like preferential treatment to everything and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, it's just kind of that like classist system that developed from, you know, you can't travel, you can't go to work, you can't do X, Y, Z, you can't go to the sports ball, you know, entertainment venue unless you have your vax, your passport or whatever. So it definitely created that kind of social stigma to people who didn't necessarily want to play ball. And I think we're still kind of dealing with that.
And I think, absolutely.
Yeah, it was really sad, honestly.
Well, and what I was finishing with was, you know, everyone's views were really polarized. And I felt like, again, you know, some people come from a very scientific background and some people come from more of an emotional. I think like, for them, there was just nothing that, you know, at the end, okay, so here's what I said. You know, it didn't, I had done my research, of course, we weren't in contact with anybody, but we were also taking all of the steps and measures that we could to not only protect ourselves, but, you know, we don't want to get anybody sick. I mean, my reason for not taking the vax had nothing to do with because, you know, fuck the system and all of that. I mean, respect for everyone has different views, but also at the end of the day, here we are sitting here 4 years later, we never got sick. My family and I never got COVID and we never got sick.
Right.
So what I've always said was regardless of, I mean, I had people telling me on Twitter I should die because I'm not willing to take a vaccine that protects others. And I'm thinking, do you really think that I wouldn't even protect myself?
Right.
I mean, not to sound selfish here, but I'm not doing this for other people. I'm actually doing this for my own health. I mean, I, you know, and again, I never got sick. We never contracted anything. And so like you're saying, looking back at the holier than thou type attitude, and I look and I tell people, you know, like you're saying, the fallout from that, I think, is that it really divided. I didn't lose any friends or, you know, family over it. I know people that did.
Yes,
but
yeah.
I felt like people just weren't acting rational or logical. And I think that
yes.
that was probably maybe part of the test.
No, it was. It definitely, I mean, and this gets into...
critical thinking and
yes, well, or the opposite of critical thinking, which, you know, this gets into some larger shit, but we don't need to necessarily get too deep into it, but this kind of trauma-based conditioning where they hit us yeah. with this huge powerful event and then we lose our mind, and it was like, you know, we kind of have this slave to authority mentality. It's like, well, you're wearing a white coat and you have a stethoscope, please tell me there's no way you would lie to me. And And looking back on it, the vaccine was nonsense. The mask we're finding out was nonsense. The social distancing, the 6 feet was nonsense. And it really kind of just pisses me off. And we can stop this here, but because it really does piss me off. I mean, the lives that were lost, the business that were lost, the people's yeah. livelihoods that were lost, the families and relationships that, like you said, were separated and people were ostracized from each other because of this narrative and this thing that happened.
Yes.
And it's not even like we're done because I, you know, whatever, I'm sure they're going to probably pull another one. But anyway, I was just curious how things wound down for you over there in Italiano as this thing kind of wound down. And something I really was into, of course, I follow you online and your social networking, etc. You and the fam did some pretty amazing international travel after things wound down. And the pictures you took were absolutely amazing. Talk to us about where you went, what that trip meant, and how that all come together.
Well, so just to wrap up what the last bit of what
for
you
sure.
had said about being affected with COVID, the biggest takeaway for me personally that I took away from that experience of, you know, the narrative and what had those 3 years essentially, right, 2020 to 2023, even till now, was that you have to live. Life really stood still, I think, for 2 full years for the entire world. And it didn't really matter if you were wealthy or not wealthy. I mean, of course, your life would be a lot more comfortable.
Sure.
But you could really tell who had empathy, who didn't have empathy. You know, I was always saying, you know, yeah, some people were in yachts, some people were on rafts. But at the end of the day, the one thing that they... quote, using quotes here, because they,
yes.
they is something different to everyone, right?
Of course.
The higher up people. The biggest fear that people have is disease, is your health. I mean, that's like your biggest currency that you have. That is the only way you can mass control people is by telling them that they're going to die from
yes.
something. I mean, people wouldn't listen any other way, but when it comes down to your health and, you know, the health of your family, I mean, that is absolutely sacred. You can't do anything else in life without that. So I realized from that experience, you know what, we need to go out and live. I had really missed traveling, and I made a list of places that I wanted to go and that I wanted to see. And I told my family that the reason why I love traveling so much and I love taking them on all my travels, and sometimes they would drag their feet and sometimes they'd roll their eyes, but at the end of every trip, they would always say, it's the most humbling experience to travel. I mean, I'm so grateful to travel and see the world. We went to Africa, we went to South America, we went to Central America, we went to every continent except for Antarctica. But Africa was life-changing for me. And that is probably my favorite place on earth for the beauty. And I'm talking about all-encompassing beauty from the way the people live, the animals, the atmosphere. I mean, my feet have never been planted like on earth like they were in Africa. It's
wow.
just incredible. Yeah. I'm
and obviously, you. That's a huge place. I mean, did I say Namibia? Was that one of them? Where did you guys go?
South Africa, Namibia, Angola. Where else? Kenya. And I have been to the Serengeti. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Tanzania.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Yeah. And I can't even tell you how it's just a reminder, you know, like I was saying earlier, just to really go out and live. I stopped buying things years ago. And I just always, if I went with my extra money, I go travel. I just pick a place and I go travel.
That's awesome.
See a place. I want to meet new people. I want to eat different food. I want to see different parts of the earth and just experience it. And I'm still even speechless, like, you know?
No, and it's really sweet that you're able to expose, not just, I mean, your family, your daughter, because I think that's something... Not to say, I mean, we get kind of trapped in these kind of, we get our blinders on, man, this kind of xenophobic, you know, I've only been here, so I only know my block, my country, my state. And I think something about, like you just said, getting out into the world in all different senses, seeing different things, tasting different foods, smelling different smells, hearing different sounds. I think it really does hopefully shape a more well-rounded human being, in my opinion, especially I think as parents, it's incumbent on us to get our children out into the world so they see it. The world as something bigger than just whatever their community. You know, communities are fine, but it is bigger than that. So that's really cool that you were able to hip your daughter up to give her that experience, man. It's invaluable. Like you said, I'm sure she's dragging her feet at the time, but looking back on it, she's gonna be like, "Wow, man! I mean, that not a lot of people are afforded that kind of gift."
She's grown so much, and I think going back to, you know, 2020 and 2021 and 2022, something that I saw in people is that you lose your instincts, right? I think that we've become so dependent on technology. I will give you a perfect example. So when we were in Africa, you know, my husband and I rented a 4x4, and there's no GPS. I mean, you're in the middle of like the desert. Right. We were in the Kalahari Desert, and we had maps, like actual paper maps. And I told him, I have not used one of these since I was a kid. And my dad used to spread it across the dashboard. It was annoying as hell. It was really crunchy. But I'm so grateful that going on all those road trips with him when I was young and camping and being out in the wild, it made me resilient and adaptable and resourceful. And I told my daughter early on when we first started traveling, these are life skills that you cannot replace. You know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, not that you're always going to be out in the middle of nowhere, but I'd rather you learn how to cook yourself a nice meal than rely on DoorDash. Nothing wrong with DoorDash, but, you know, I just... Maybe this is sort of how we force our upbringing on our own kids, because we didn't have that. And so my parents worked long hours and I had to learn how to cook. And I love cooking. And so back to what you had just said, you know, she's just growing up to be appreciative of learning all of these skills. And I think it's been humbling for her as well to see how other kids live, how other kids get their education, what they're exposed to out there in the world. She doesn't take a lot of things for granted like she used to.
And that's kind of the crucial part of that life lesson. We, you know, especially in the West, you know, first world, we definitely take things for granted. We wake up, we check our phone, you have perfectly good plumbing or heating. I mean, again, you get into certain parts of the world.
And the plumbing, oh my gosh.
It's very different. But again, those life skills, and it's something, you know, I can only imagine your daughter, and I'm half joking, but I see a lot of TikTok and stuff online where parents are introducing their kids to like cassette tape or VHS, and they're like looking at it like it's, you know, something alien. And I can only imagine your daughter looking at this, you know, Rand McNally map, and she's like, why is mom messing with this old Egyptian papyrus paper? Like, what is this, all this paper around? It's like, it's a lost art. But I'm telling you what, I'm an outdoor guy myself, and I've always kind of been, but I think you said our kids are losing it. I would tell you, man, it's better to have those skills and not need it than to need it and not have it, because, you know, just generally speaking, when you see us lose power for even a few hours, look at what happens, man. Let that happen for like a week or so or any length of time. I mean, we have become very dependent on technology. So I think it's like, again, going back to the life lessons that she's able to see, learning these life skills, traveling the world, things can get ugly real quick, and those skills are better to have than not have.
I loved being in the desert at night. I loved being in the wild and seeing the animals just in their natural habitat. I feel like that part of the world is disappearing so rapidly too. And you realize you're the lowest on the food chain, right? Because I can remember this instance where we're driving out of the park and these elephants, there's probably about 400 or 500 elephants, and they're migrating across and they're making their way to the water holes at night. That's what they do. And so I remember they're getting closer and closer to our car. And it's terrifying. Like, you can feel the ground shaking. They're in creatures. And I'm just instinctively, like, I'm terrified. And so, you know, we make it out. And the next day I ask the park ranger, because they live with these animals. Like, they have grown up. This is their backyard. And so I asked one of the women, and I said, what do I do when an elephant, like, approaches me? And she's looking at me like, you know, and I think it made her laugh, because she's like, oh, yes, here come these tourists. You know, they come, you know, they come in and they just think they're going to hang out with elephants and lions and tigers. But, you know, the point being, like, I really learned so much respect, and I learned so much about how they just coexist with animals. And I think that it was just I mean, I don't even know if I'm articulating myself. But, you know, she was explaining to me how we really don't tap into that, those emotions, you know, the fear, all of the things that I was experiencing are really vital. Like, and I feel like we get stagnant.
Yes.
You know, we don't allow ourselves to travel and experience, you know, different parts of nature or different, I don't know, different things. We don't grow. We lose our ability to feel those things, and we don't feel alive. And so,
yeah, we kind of just more exist than live. And I think it's on my bucket list too. And I've always been a big, like, you know, Discovery Channel, David Attenborough. You always see,
I could totally hear you narrating. Like,
let me do my best, David Attenborough. The majestic North American black bear nurses her cubs ever so gently while remaining vigilant for potential predators lurking about. There we go.
You could do that. You could do it.
But no, seeing that face to face, and even on television, you recognize that fine line between life and death. And, you know, you're hanging out with your friends at the water pond one day, and all of a sudden you get snatched up by a freaking, you know, Nile crocodile, and the game's over. It happens in an instant. But yeah, I think it does help give perspective, whether you're a child or an adult.
And capturing, you know, I started a blog, myteradise.com. I started my blog because this was a way for me to not just rebrand myself and in a different way, but also, I think, give a different side of myself to fans and to people out there. Because, again, during the lockdown, you know, I had my OnlyFans and I had my website, but I felt like it was just such a one-sided way that people were seeing me. They had always known me from adult, and I was like, hey, I'm not one-dimensional. I like to do other things. And so I think this is, you know, I wanted people to come along for the ride, so yes, to speak, and see me living life, because I think that that's the key to, you know, staying, I think, not just consistent in your career, but, you know, on a personal level as well. It kind of forced me to reevaluate as we were coming out of lockdown. It forced me to reevaluate, like, hey, I've had all this time off. Where do I want to go? What do I want to do? What's next?
Right. Well, and that's cool, man. We all are very multifaceted human beings, and that's very cool that you want to show multiple sides of yourself. And part of, I don't know if I said this on air, maybe this was prior to our conversation, but I was telling Tara that our YouTube video, because I was saying how I don't post on really YouTube anymore, they took our conversation down because they were saying it was something about nudity. And I mean, we barely talked about the industry. And I guess my point is that it was so cool, because even when I tell people that I've interviewed before and I'm going to interview you again, I was like, you know what? We talked about adult and whatever for maybe like 10, 15 minutes. The rest was other aspects of your life. And I found it very cool. Like you'd said, you'd gone back to school. Touch on that again, on what you went back to school for and how that is another huge other facet of your life. And I want to get into kind of how it's affecting what I'm doing, because I'm working with some people about addressing some of the issues you're talking about as it relates to food, our air, our water, our food, and specifically our soil.
Yes. So I went back to school to get board certified as a nutritional chemist. And I was working in a laboratory here for a while, just analyzing food. And I was working in a private clinic that takes on clients who have like chronic illnesses. And basically, it's kind of like the end of the line for them. Like, they've had different tests, they've seen, whether it's an endocrinologist or, you know, their general practitioner, but they just haven't been able to find any help with different we have a lot of different conditions, from Lyme disease, autoimmune diseases, skin disease, digestive issues, things like that. And so I was helping. We have two medical doctors, we have a team of nurses, and just, you know, helping people get healthy, starting with their diet, supplements, you know, kind of doing an overhaul, overhaul their health. Wow, that was a lot. But even for myself personally, because during lockdown, it was really interesting how I felt like people either became hyper aware of their health or they were like not even willing to change anything.
I think it doesn't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. I see both of them. I see more education, more information about health. Health is wealth. Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And those people really gravitate towards that. And then you will always, this isn't a knock on McDonald's. Do your thing. Get it how you live it. But I always am amazed when I see the drive-through line when I pass a McDonald's. I'm like, people are still fucking doing this? McDonald's? Yeah. I mean, I get it's convenient and stuff, but what we now know about that garbage, that's a certain segment of society is never going to give a shit. They're just going to continue to, you know, it is what it is. But I think you're right. I think there was way more education on food. And again, getting into kind of this, not just food, but the conditions in which the food is grown, our food, our water, our air, our soil has been tainted in such a crazy way. And this isn't a referendum on RFK Jr. at all, but when he announced his vice presidential pick, Nicole Shanahan, one of the first words out of her mouth, 'cause she produced a couple movies about, I have some issues with some of it, but about addressing these issues, the environmental issues that relates to our soil and how our food's grown, where it's grown, and us eating basically this garbage and getting sick and then lining up into the pharmaceutical world to keep us sick. So, I mean, again, it gets in kind of that somewhat revolving conspiratorial door, but I think it's hugely important that you show that other side of yourself to hopefully educate and bring awareness to people about this stuff they may not be aware of.
So this is so interesting because going back to what you just said, what I found in the year and a half that I was working in this clinic, okay, in our clinic, was that the information is out there. That's never been disputable. What is disputable for people is, and two things that I learned right off the bat are, first things that there is such thing as too much information. A lot of people out there, when they're sick, when they're not feeling well, and like I said, our clinic is pretty much where people go because they're frustrated, right? Their doctor's not listening to them, or they've paid a ton of money, you know, because healthcare isn't cheap. So it's like, I've seen a specialist, I've seen an endocrinologist, or I'm not feeling better, and I've changed my diet. Changing the diet could be just, I didn't eat potato chips for a week, I didn't feel better, so I went back to it. I mean, it goes on and on. That's not really a change, but, you know, hey, baby steps, right?
Right.
And the other flip part of that is the conditioning, like you brought up. People, what frustrated me, and this is why I was like, I'm just going to go back into the lab and I will bring you guys back the results of their blood, urine, hair, skin, tissue, whatever, because I got so frustrated, and it took me a long time to comprehend that people, they have such a deep emotional tie to their food. Yes. So explaining, bringing back McDonald's is nostalgic for a lot of people. For a lot of people, they're comfort eaters. You know, you've just come out of lockdown. Alcohol? People turned to alcohol. I could tell them 1,000 times, you know, alcohol lowers your immune system, this and that, but they're like, yeah, okay. Even if you put the scientific evidence, at the end of the day, if they've had a long ass day, they are going through a divorce, someone just died, they're going to reach for something that's comforting to them. So I think that it was really difficult for me to, you know, I remember, you know, especially when you have a diabetic patient and you're trying to explain to them that, you know, they're going to die if they keep eating the way that they're eating with the, you know, the sugar and artificial, then they want to try artificial sweeteners. I mean, I'm saying this in extreme layman's terms because for a lot of people, they cannot understand the complexities of you trying to explain what's happening to their cells, what's happening to their body at a cellular level. And so they are just like, no, I eat a cookie and I feel better. Can't I have a sugar-free cookie? And I'm like, okay, how can I, right. you know, Like you're trying to explain to them, no, you can't have any cookies. This is not going to take what that's the only thing that's going to take away the inflammation and make you feel better. But they're still
right.
trying to bargain
yes.
away
yes.
to get a cookie. So, you
it's
know,
not funny because that literally have people. I'm sorry to digress too much, but one of my favorite comedians was Patrice O'Neill, God rest him, but he passed away due to complications from diabetes. And
yes,
I'm sorry.
No, I loved him, Patrice O'Neill.
Oh, he was absolutely amazing. But he's yeah. one of his joke one time, having that rationalization of like, oh my God, they have chocolate covered Oreos. My God, I have to have chocolate covered Oreos. And if I have to have chocolate covered Oreos, I have to have milk with it. And he's lactose intolerant. And then you rationalize to yourself, he's like, what? I can have this pack of chocolate covered Oreos. I don't need both feet. It's just like,
yes. yes. They're the bargaining. And it's,
yes.
it's, you know, it's frustrating because you want to help people. And I find that a lot of doctors, a lot of nurses, a lot of healthcare professionals in general, you know, they give up, they throw their hands in the air and they're like, okay, well, if you'd rather take a pill for the rest of your life. And I think that unfortunately for a lot of people, back to what you had said, when we talk about the trust, you know, we trust in our system so much. It's
yeah.
really a rug pull. It was, I think, so frustrating and sad and maddening for people to go, wait, what? The vax didn't work? Why did we go through all that? Or wait, what? You know, people, I mean, even now with the whole Ozempic, you know, people
yes.
are like, oh, no problem. I need to lose 100 pounds fast. So I'm going to take these pills. I mean, why do we perpetuate that?
Well, and again, having the information, even you can look it up. I mean, this in the United States, the third leading cause of death in the United States is people dying under doctor's care.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. And I mean, this gets into like another whole thing. I think about like Stockholm syndrome. Like we just keep believing the people who've lied to us over and over again and just kind of don't want to do our own due diligence, critical thinking. What's that?
No, why would they hurt us? Right.
That's yeah, exactly. Yes, 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 yes.
So we I didn't want to jump off here real quick, but when you had said talking about death under doctor's care, living here in Italy has been life changing for me as far as my health goes. And I had a terrible accident back in October.
So you're jumping the shark, but this is my next subject I wanted to talk to you about. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm interrupting you, but go ahead.
No, not at all. Shall I let you ask the question?
But... No, I was concerned because like I said, I'm following you. You said something about like, I'm just getting back to like normal, et cetera. I'm like, what? I mean, I follow you, but I mean, obviously you're not going to divulge all this information. So I was obviously concerned, nothing but love for you. So you had been, whatever, explain what happened, man.
So what I was going to say was the healthcare system here in Italy, my God, I mean, incredible, just seriously top, top tier. And so back in October, I was out one night, it was about 10:30 at night, and I had about a 40-minute walk home from where I was. I was on the other side of my city, and I said, okay, you know what, I'm just going to scan the app here and take one of these electric bikes, you know, like those Lyft scooters. We yeah. have the electric bikes here. I've ridden it 2 or 3 times, thought no big deal. I'm on the electric bike probably for about 3 minutes. And, you know, I don't know, we're old school. When you stop on a bike, you either backpedal, like you push your feet back and you can stop, or
yeah.
you use the brakes on the handlebars, right? I
yeah.
mean, that's what I remember. Well, this doesn't do that. These electric bikes, the brake, it actually accelerated the bike. So I thought I was stopping because I looked down and I saw that I was actually riding on the train tracks, the tracks of the train. So I looked down and thought, oh, I need to just get off these tracks and get on some normal, you know, ground. When I went to turn left and I thought kind of slow down the bike, I actually accelerated the bike and I had no traction on the train tracks and the tire got stuck. So I spun out, crashed, a bike landed on me. I landed on the left side of my face. And I broke my face. I broke the entire left side of my face, shattered my, I'm saying in Italian, but basically my orbital eye box, jaw, cheeks. And I only remember like I felt some arms. Now this is 10:30 at night and the train runs till midnight. So I'm laying on the tracks with like
what?
The bike on me. Yeah. There's no one around. It's pitch black. And I did, there was a kid though, he saw me fall. I say kid, he was 19. He was actually visiting from Sicily. So he wasn't even from my region, but he saw me fall. He picked me up off the train tracks, left the bike there, of course, because his priority was getting me to a hospital. He called the ambulance. he stayed there with me. He was talking. He was like, hey, I can speak some English. Like, was totally making me laugh. What a sweet kid.
Oh my gosh.
A lifesaver. And yeah, that I went. So the ambulance came in about 10 minutes, took me to the ER. I would say within an hour. And this is a Saturday night, mind you. I had a CAT scan, brain scan, full body scan. Like, they didn't waste any time. And the ER was full. My point is, by 6 in the morning, I had an eye specialist. They transferred me to the oral maxillofacial unit. They had to wait a week to operate because they said, you know, this was just the beginning. The swelling was about to swell, but they said I had no brain damage, no other broken bones. Like, my neck was fine, my head was fine, but the level of care that I had through this whole trauma, through this whole experience, I mean, first of all, it would have been almost probably $1 million in the U.S. The nurses, the doctors, I mean, I'm so grateful. We waited a week and they completely, I know, I wish we were. Oh no, am I talking too much?
My God, it's never happened. I don't know if it's because you're overseas or whatever, but I'm sorry. You were saying.
It's all good. No, but you know, it was a super traumatic experience, obviously. I mean, I've gone all these years in my life without ever breaking a bone, but that was, you know, I think when something like that happens to you, it was like, thank God, you know, I'm so grateful, but it was very hard. I mean, the recovery, it took me a good month to recover from that, but my face, breaking my face, something that I've made my entire living off of.
I was gonna say, that's your moneymaker, man.
It was brutal. It was really brutal. And I remember the doctors, you know, they were like, don't worry, we're going to put you back together. And I was, so yeah, I'm all titanium, like Terminator over here on the left side. You can't tell, but it was like, I have some nerve damage, you know, my lip and my infraorbital nerve is a bit, it's coming back. It might take a year or two, but I'm alive.
I have to ask, and it's not to be dark or macabre about it. As you just alluded to, your face is your moneymaker. And so after this happened, you've never, like you said, had any kind of traumatic injury like that, especially to your face. As you experience that, not only just the blow of it, but watch the swelling. You have to be in your own head of like, oh my God, look away, I'm hideous. You know what I mean? It's like, is this?
I couldn't look at myself. I didn't mean to cut you off, but no, you know, when I fell and when I was sitting on the curb waiting for the ambulance to come, the kid was very nice. You know, he was very, very sweet. He was trying to talk to me. He was trying to keep me calm, you know? And in my head, Cypress Hill was playing, "We Ain't Going Out Like That." I was thinking, because I'm thinking, fuck, Tara Patrick cannot go out on an electric bike. What the hell is this? This is all I'm thinking. All I'm thinking is like, you know, you work in entertainment. It's like the headlines, right?
Right.
She goes out on an electric bike. Like,
well, when you're like on the train tracks too, like Tara Patrick ran over by a train after a bike accident in fucking Italy. It's like, what?
Right? That would be the most awful thing. So I was sitting there thinking, I can't believe this song is playing in my head, but I was like, I cannot go out like this. There's so much more living I have to do.
But Tara, everyone, of course it didn't happen. And thank God you are fine, but everyone would flock to that train track if that happened. There'd be vigils for months. I mean, it was like, this is where it happened right here.
This is where she went out. And, you know, it is interesting, like, that our brains go to this as, you know, as someone who's worked in entertainment all of these years, like, this was my concern, you know.
It's makes a valid concern. I mean,
yeah, but it also makes you reprioritize a lot of things because I was, you know, like you said, I was really humbled. I mean, I told myself, wow, I've always measured myself and my career. All of this has always been measured by my looks, you know, by my face. And it's humbling to realize, like, you know, that I think a lot of people compare it to getting older. You know, it's like, your worth, I guess is what I'm trying to say, you know? So I was really scared, like, okay, this better be it. You know, I guess after I have surgery, I can't work anymore. Maybe this is it.
Well, and it kind of goes back full circle to what we were just talking about the value of going in, you know, teaching your child, even yourself, about traveling internationally, especially somewhere like third, you know, Africa and the Serengeti, where you see the line between life and death can be crossed so quickly. And yes, accidents like that, I mean, it's just like in an instant, your life changes.
Yes, it changes. And that's exactly what I was trying to articulate. So in my mind, when I was recovering, I said to myself, okay, well, you know what? You've gotten your education. You don't have to model anymore. You don't have to use your face to make a living anymore. You know, you're worth more than that. You can move on. You can, maybe this is a sign to do other things. And ironically, that happened in October. I had gotten the call to do the AVN show. So the AVN Expo is the biggest adult expo that we have every year. It's a convention. And this would be my 24th year that I've been in the industry. So half my life. And so I said, you know what? I retired in 2009 officially. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to the show. And I'm just going to, you know, sell my book again, because I have so part two of Sinner Takes All, my biography, will come out at Christmas time, December 2024. So I'm looking forward to that. I have to get you a copy. I have to mail you a copy. Remind me.
I would love to read that.
Yes, I want to give you a copy. And of course, with the first one, Sinner Takes All, as well. And I said, you know what? I was scared that I was going to look, you know, not the same, but, you know, I got nothing but love. And it was so nice to go back after all these years. The weird thing was I didn't know one person.
Oh, wow.
Changed so much. Everyone was young, you know, everyone was different and from a different time. I was from a different time. I was signing my Aqua Teen Hunger Force DVD. And then a few fans brought me some magazines, and one of the girls turned to me, such a sweetheart, and she said, "You were on magazines?"
Oh,
like, yeah, different time, you know. And she goes, "What's that DVD? That is that a cartoon? What is that?" And she didn't know what Adult Swim was. So I think it's like towing the line between like the old school and the new.
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely bridges that gap. I mean, I don't mean to. I was talking to somebody younger somewhat recently. I'm like, yeah, they're asking me about the podcast who I interview. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be interviewing Terry Patrick. Who's Terry Patrick? This younger person. I get it. This, she didn't know. But she knew enough. I'm like, remember like the late 90s, you know, 2000s? It was basically you and, sorry if there's any heat between you, but it was. It was like you and Jenna were the first ones to really bounce out and create your own brands and break away from the producers. And this is the early W, you know, the web days. So you guys really locked it down and just changed the game. And so, yeah, I was actually re-listening to our first episode and that we kind of brought that up. Because, I mean, it's something that just can't be overlooked. From VHS to digital and the World Wide Web days and internet and you guys being able to capitalize and becoming the, you know, captain of your own pirate ship of sorts and not having to be beholden. And that just changed, the internet changed the game in multiple genres, whether it's music, whether it's movies, you know, entertainment in general. You were able to become master of your own ship, and you guys did that in such an incredible way in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, becoming really, I mean, that's why you guys are kind of the Mount Rushmore now, the goats of kind of the game, and especially when it comes to like branding and really taking control of your career, because it was very different. I mean, it still has that element of it, but you guys really start taking control of your own career and showing that's possible to take control of your own career, build your own brands without having to be beholden to some of the creepos in the business.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the same business model that they, you know, that we use in mainstream. And that's sort of what I would all, you know, unfortunately, the stigma with adult and adult content will always be there. That's just not something that, I mean, clearly from YouTube, that's just something clearly that we can't change. But what I found is that this whole new wave, you know, of entrepreneurs that have come in and made their living, whether it be OnlyFans or, yes, you know, other online platforms, now we're going into AI. So that is something that I've been able to do, is that I've been able to repurpose all of my old content into AI, and I've brought in a whole new generation of fans, which is, you know, obviously a lot younger demographic, but the internet lives forever. And so I told myself, okay, well, you know what? I broke my face, but I have this entire body of work. And so what am I going to do with it? I own it. I own my likeness. I own my, you know, the copyright to all of most of my movies, all of my, you know, photography. There's just so much that I can repurpose and do with it. And it goes back to now what I'm seeing an uptick in is just, again, these parasocial relationships where, you know, they exist online. You know, I have a few conflicting views on that. I've never promoted, I don't promote adult content to the point to where it's unhealthy. I never advocate that people, you know, put away their life savings or, you know, ruin their family life or their home life. It exists, in my opinion, like I've said, for entertainment only. And it's absolutely only for adults. I've always been vigilant about that with all of my own work and my sites. But I feel like it's an issue. It could be a problem. It could be a problem, like during lockdown, right? I was talking about how guys or people would just be online for hours at a time.
It can get very dangerous, as you know, you've been in the game long enough where part of your gig of sorts is trying to create a certain level of fantasy, but it's like watching a movie. Like, suspend your disbelief for a hot minute and recognize, you know,
it's entertainment.
It's entertainment. And so you have that contingent, even though it's a small percentage, all it needs is one freaking weirdo to take it wrong. But some people have a lot of trouble, deciphering, they blur that line. Like, no, she, you know, I was just listening to something the other day, and I don't mean to put this kind of out in the universe, but like John Hinckley, I'd heard he had a house out in Los Angeles, and what he did with Ronald Reagan years and years ago to impress Jodie Foster. Like, what the fuck makes you think? I mean, anyway. Wow.
Yeah. No, you know, our good friend, Sam Tripoli.
Yeah. Shout out to Sammy.
When I used to do the Naughty Show and we would travel, you know, he would set up this Q&A sometimes when I would be on stage, and he got a big kick out of it. I used to crack up because he would love to hear, like, I had this series that I did called Fan Mail, FANMALE. And I would tell him, like, all of these, you know, wild, you know, letters or now emails and just, you know, things that I would get from fans that were just, again, blurring the line with, you know, fantasy and reality. And again, this isn't something that I find amusing or, you know, or appropriate. I mean, I've always mandated that, you know, please use it wisely, use it responsibly, like alcohol, you know, porn shouldn't be consumed to a point of, you know, where your life is completely degraded. But, you know, again, going into the future now with AI, it's something that I think my motto is just, you know, you have to get with the times or get left behind. And so having a brand and having this library of content and having everything that I have. And again, I'm never not going to be Tara Patrick. That is a funny conversation I had with Sam years ago, because he was like, yeah, you retired. I retired at the height of, I was 30. And I kind of could see the future of where the business was going with the internet. This was sort of when the tube sites were coming in and really just kind of chopping up and exploiting and taking a lot of our content and putting it out there illegally.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want any part of that. I don't want it to fall in the wrong hands. I don't want it to be abused in, you know, any way. And I just wasn't down with that. And I think that we can see that happening with streaming sites now, and
for sure,
so many different facets of entertainment, you know.
Well, you know, it goes back to, you know, back in the old school Napster days, you know, people just, you know, taking people's music. I mean, it's been an evolution and a learning process. And that's cool, kind of fortuitous of you to kind of see where it was going, because, you know, that IP, maintaining control of your IP, that intellectual property, is absolutely crucial. You know, this kind of gets in again to the entertainment industry, music, people understanding now the owning of your masters, the owning of your intellectual property is really where the dough's at, so you can be in control of how it's distributed. So kudos to you, man. I'm anxious to see how some of the AI stuff plays out, because the game is changing, like, in real time. It's absolutely crazy.
And you have to get with it. You have to move forward.
Don't tell it to my dad. He's 81 years old and still rocks a flip phone. He's like, don't text me. Fucking, I don't know how to text. Call me. He's old school, so he'll never get it. But it is changing. Technology is absolutely changing. I don't want to keep you too much longer, Tara. And again, I thank you so much for your time. And man, thank you for talking about that accident. I was really wondering, I'm like, man, what happened to my girl, dude? Because it sounded pretty serious. And I'm glad you come out the other side. Okay, I'm going to ask you a few, to end it on a little bit lighter note, some corny ass, maybe like, for lack of a better term, like first date, getting to know you kind of questions. Because I don't know, I just found it curious. I was sitting up last night, I'm like, what do you want to ask her that's not so heavy, but just like kind of pick your brain, just weird, dumb shit. So I want to ask, Tara Patrick, who was, if you remember, who was your first crush?
Oh my gosh, my first crush.
Or like main squeeze, you know what I mean? I guess a crush could be different than like an actual boyfriend, but who was your first, like, oh my God, he's so dreamy?
So are we talking about in real life? Or?
In real life, no. Well, I mean, either one. I mean, who did you first have eyes on? Real life in the, you know, whatever world.
Well, because I was going to say real life, no. But I had a crush on, so I loved the movie The Warriors, and I had a crush on Swan. Swan was, I don't know, he was probably the first male, I don't know, guy that I remember looking at and thinking, whoa. There we go.
just as it's getting good. All right. So the fellow from the Warriors, which one was he?
Swan. So he was like my first, like the first guy that I was kind of like, wow, he's really hot.
Swan from the Warriors. That's a classic. Classic.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So like somewhat, you know, boyfriend, like who was that one, like the first, you know, your first squeeze?
My first boyfriend was he was a jock. He was a football player, and his name was Chris. And it was funny, he actually dumped me for a Swedish exchange student. So we had a Swedish exchange student that came to our school. She was totally the opposite of me. She was very tall, long blonde hair. I remember her name was Vella. And I just remember, like, yeah, that was, like, really disheartening to me, you know?
Where'd you grow up again?
I grew up near San Francisco. So, okay. Like, Berkeley, yeah. Northern California, yeah.
Chris, you fool. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, it was just so disappointing, you know, dumped me. And for an exchange student, I thought, she's not going to stick around.
Have you any measure of contact over the years with Chris?
No, not at all. But it is funny. One of the first shows that I did, I would say back around 2003, 2004, I used to do a Hot Import Nights, which was like a traveling car show. And I remember doing an appearance in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And there were some girls that had gone to high school with me. And I had only gone to the first year of high school before I got my good enough diploma. But they were there standing in line to get my autograph. And I just remember they were sweet. And they were just like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. We remember you. And I remember just sitting there signing the autographs thinking, wow, it's so weird how life is like this, you know, like,
wow. Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
And then someone's getting your, you know, girls are that didn't pay you any attention in high school. We were just in a different clique. You know, I was a metalhead.
For sure.
I loved metal, but they were like standing there getting my autograph. And I thought, who would have thought like 10 years later, I'd be signing autographs for girls that I went to high school with. It was just an interesting twist.
That's hilarious. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. I had my 30th high school reunion a couple years ago. And it was, I mean, I was always a pretty cool cat. I'm not like a jock by any stretch. I always kind of knew everybody. But I mean, my quote unquote career, some of the stuff I've done, it's like some of the people who probably we didn't talk much back in the day. It's like, oh my God, Jeff, you did the thing and you're talking to this. I mean, it's interesting. Obviously 30 years passed. So it's like, you know, it's hopefully that click shit's gone away. But
right.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, man. The metalhead, Tara, the metalhead. Actually, after you, are you familiar with Five Fingers of Death?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about to interview their head of security here is going to be coming on. He works with Rob Zombie, Limp Bizkit, Five Fingers of Death. Yeah, interesting. Real cool cat, man. John Simon's going to be coming on here in a little bit. But I am not going to keep you too much longer. A couple more corny questions I'm going to let you slide. Again, thank you so much for your time. First crush was your boy, Chris. If you were to slow jams, you're a metal girl, but I mean, not necessarily slow jams, necessarily R&B, you know, baby making music, but like some of your like kickback ballads. What are some of your favorites? Slow jams.
Oh, R&B is forever. I love slow jams. I like Joe.
Nice.
One of my
I
with
wanna
that.
know.
No, yes. One of my favorite albums is Ghetto Love by Jaheim, if I'm saying it right.
Jaheim, yeah.
I love that jam, Just in Case. Oh yeah, I love Rafael Sadiq. He's really elegant. I love
So you like that R&B when it was good, that old school 90s, early 2000s.
That's all I listen to. Like I listen, it's that or what was I listen? Donnell Jones. I was
There
listening to
you
him.
go.
Yeah,
Nice.
so it's like metal or R&B. But R&B is just it's just so deep and good. And you know, I have to say, maybe I need to expand my taste a little bit. Not taste, but my I listen to that era because it's almost like it's like a core memory, I guess, or I don't
Yeah,
know.
for sure.
Thing for me, I don't listen to a lot of the new stuff. It just doesn't have that depth. Oh, I love Joe Budden. I think he's incredible. He's an incredible writer, very prolific. Even Bad Brains. I mean, so much of what they've said and predicted has been true.
For sure. I mean, I always think it's
Really
important to
relevant.
have a kind of going back to our travel conversation, getting out into the world, having an eclectic ear, being able to listen. I mean, I listened a little bit of every, I mean, you name it, like from freaking Rachmaninoff to some metal, to some R&B, to some rap. Not so much, I have a tough time with rap anymore. I can't listen to really the new stuff, but when I listen to even the old stuff, I mean, it takes it to such a dark place, and I really understand how it got weaponized against. Anyway, it's kind of a little bit different, but I listen to everything. I think it's important for everybody to have kind of an eclectic ear and be able to appreciate all different aspects of music, you know,
Oh,
in
absolutely.
my humble. All right,
Opinion.
last one. And if there's any like a Mount Rushmore or top five of like your favorite flicks, something like, you know, that's that desert island, something you could constantly watch. What are your top four or five? Mount Rushmore plus one.
Ooh, so Goodfellas. I like Goodfellas. Man on Fire. That's a good one. Casablanca would be a good one. Let me think of something from modern times. You know, I'm a really big fan of who did Eugene Levy, who did Best in Show?
Oh yeah, hilarious.
Christopher Guest. I love Christopher Guest.
Oh
I
yeah.
think he's hilarious. I love all of his movies.
Spinal Tap.
Oh my gosh, Spinal Tap, the Stonehenge scene, I will
Jeez.
roll every time. But I'm a big fan of classic movies. So if I'm on a plane, I will always either read or I will go for just the oldest classic movies I can find. I was on this past trip, I watched Cool Hand Luke,
Nice.
12 Angry Men, which actually is such a great film, and it's Henry Fonda. I hadn't seen it in a while, but it was so interesting when we, in closing, when we talk about the social experiments. You know, this was about 12 jurors, of course, having to convict a 16-year-old boy for the death of his father. And so it was one juror that was holding out, and he was trying to explain, "Hey, you've got to tell me beyond a reasonable doubt why we can convict this kid. Because if we convict this kid, he's going to die." And so I need you guys to convince me, you know, of his guilt. And it turns out, you know, I can't give it away, but you know, one had such a fractured relationship with his own son, one had a fractured relationship with his father. So it goes back to just how we are conditioned as people to put our prejudices and a lot of our own, negative things, trauma that we've experienced into our judgment, and we're not always using our best judgment.
Wow, I haven't caught that one. I've heard about that. That's definitely a classic I've heard.
12 Angry Men. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a little slow. I mean, I guess if you, I mean, you probably need binoculars. It's certainly like if you're going to try to watch it, but you know, but a lot of those classic films, you know, what I love about them too is I mean, this may sound ironic coming from me, but I enjoy romance. I enjoy the build up. I enjoy men being men and ladies being ladies. I don't really enjoy all that graphic,
Yeah.
whether it's violence or anything to
the traditional stuff. Like my daughter, like when she said when we watch some of these old movies, like it's very wholesome. She liked to use that word. It's very wholesome, very traditional. And I think that's something that's definitely lacking in some of our social discourse today.
I agree.
You had mentioned something about, and if you don't have it, don't no worries. You had mentioned something about a big announcement you wanted to make on the show. Is that something that we can do?
Yes. So I just shot a campaign. So talking about blessings, you know, in life, I was able to, of course, I did a couple trade shows. I just came back from Chicago. I had done my 16th Chicago Exotica Expo, which was wonderful. And I shot a big campaign for a fashion brand called Eckhaus Lata, Eckhaus. And then Latta. So super high end fashion. It's going to be in Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. And that was huge for me. Huge.
Nice.
So huge mainstream gig. And just going back to my roots, I started as a fashion model when I was 14, 15. So this was just, as a woman, this was just something so. I still got it. No.
Yeah. Well, that's still, no, for sure. Don't ever sleep on that, Tara. You might have broke your face, but you're as gorgeous as the day is long. And that, you know, that is a very cool thing. I mean, like you said, going mainstream, and you know, like you said, obviously, you still got it, girl.
The stigma of being, you know, an adult, you know, having been an adult in my past, knowing that there are brands out there that just still want to collaborate and still want to work and still, you know, want to You know, it was so nice. It was just so nice to be recognized and to be in a publication like this. It's huge.
For sure.
I'm really huge. So I'm excited.
As the kids say, game recognizes game, Tara Patrick. And okay. I cannot thank you enough for taking the time. I know it's been a hot minute and I've hopefully not been annoyingly persistent.
No.
But I want to thank you. Continued success, man. Any social networking? I mean, you're a little bit of everywhere. Where can we track you down and follow your success and what you're up to?
So my official blog site is mytaradise.com, and that is my home portal for everything. And I update it weekly with travel, food, health, life stuff. It's all Tara. And yeah, share. Thank you. You've been such a good friend, Jeffrey, and so supportive. And I'm so grateful. Thank you for having me on your show and just showcasing another side of me.
For sure. And that's what I really wanted to focus on. Like I said, I talked about our first conversation. Like we talked about adult stuff for like, I don't know. There's just more to you. And that's really what I find fascinating. I think most people are going to find fascinating because we're all multidimensional, but you are very fascinating, multidimensional, beautiful, you know, you're an amazing mother, amazing wife, I'm sure. And you just, you know, there's a lot of more substance to you than things you might've done 20 years ago. I mean, that was wonderful stuff too, but I mean, there's a lot more to you. And so I'm glad you were able to come out here and do whatever you do to help to showcase the multiple aspects of who you are, Tara.
Thank you.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the most bestest, most lovely Tara Patrick. Peace and so much love. Stay tuned. There will always be more.